Tuesday, November 20th, 2018. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single weekday. We talk sports with a dose of common sense. Hopefully, we can make you smile at the sports world a little bit. I mean, it doesn't have to be so serious. I was actually listening to some local sports talk on Monday, just about the Denver Broncos win over the Chargers. And it was just crazy how intense people were, how crazy people were on the local sports radio shows. I mean, here is a big win. Here's a nice win for the Denver Broncos. All people can do is call in and complain about the Denver Broncos head coach. I was like, wow, people need to slow way down. People are angry. Your team just won a game and they are mad at the head coach still because, I don't know, they still don't feel he's doing a good enough job. If you are sick of that kind of sports talk, come over to the Daily Dose. You're going to like it here a little bit better. We are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Tuesday to you. It is a holiday week, and we are making our way through this week. You know, it was on this day, November 20th, back in 1977, the Chicago Bears running back Walter Payton rushed for what was at the time an NFL record 275 yards. You know, it was a cold, windy afternoon back in 77 at Soldier Field, and Bears quarterback Bob Avellini threw just one pass in the first half against the Minnesota Vikings, which was actually a 6-yard completion to Walter Payton. But Walter Payton ended up breaking the NFL single game rushing record that day, which had been held by O.J. Simpson at 273 yards. On the day, Walter Payton carries the ball 40 times for 275 yards and a touchdown, and the Bears somehow squeaked out a 10-7 victory with quarterback Bob Avellini doing next to nothing. What's amazing about the performance was that Walter Payton did it with a 101 degree temperature, flu-like symptoms. You know, it's kind of interesting. We have seen flu-like symptoms sometimes have the opposite effect, and I honestly believe it is because you focus on the task at hand and nothing else. Here is a clip from Walter Payton's first run of the day. This comes to us from CBS WBBM back in Chicago.
Wing to the right is Schubert. Wide to the left is Scott. Hand off to Walter Payton. Sliding to the right side. It pops out of the 30, the 35, the 40, the 45, the 50, and out of bounds. It's making territory knocked out by Paul Krause at about the 46-yard line. And there's a 28-yard run by Mr. Explosion himself on the very first play of the ball game.
You know, it's kind of funny to think back to this game with Walter Payton and the big numbers that he put up, because this was in the middle of the running back golden years. I mean, you had just come off of those Zonka and Kick days. You had had Paul Hornung back with the Packers. Now you had Walter Payton. Earl Campbell was coming on the scene. Tony Dorsett was coming on the scene. You were going to see guys like Eric Dickerson and Marcus Allen come along soon. And then you would have the Barry Sanders and the Emmitt Smith running backs coming later. You know, you look at the league now, and we are starting to see a little bit of an influx of talent at the quarterback position, but the running back, that's not nearly as valued as it used to be. And I know there's the big thing this year with Le'Veon Bell and his holdout. But when you just look at running backs in general, name one team that just builds their franchise around the running back. Back at the time that Walter Payton did this, the Chicago Bears were Walter Payton. He was the focal point. There was no one else. It was Walter Payton and, I don't know, some other guys on the team. Just kind of crazy when we think of where the NFL has gone since then. Hey, if you would like to contact us, maybe let us know your favorite running back of all time. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. So if you've got a question, you've got a comment, you've got a suggestion, reach out to us. We would love to hear what you have to say. Today on the show, we do have a couple of things coming out in the world of breaking news that we need to make sure that we touch on. But, you know, with Mondays being so busy, on Tuesdays during football season, we kind of like to go back to the weekend and just take a little closer look at what took place in football over the weekend. Because in both college football and professional football, we saw a number of winners and losers. We're going to get to those today. But let's go ahead and jump in. Let's start off with that Monday night football game last night where a basketball game broke out between the 9-1 Kansas City Chiefs and the 9-1 Los Angeles Rams. You'll remember this game had been moved to LA from Mexico. Why did that game last night feel like a playoff game? There was nothing really on the line. I mean, it was a game between two of the top teams in the league, but there's no playoff implications here. It felt absolutely like there was a playoff game. There was an electricity in the air, and the game itself was absolutely wild. Do you remember back in the early 1990s when the Houston Oilers had those crazy pass-happy teams with Warren Moon, and he's throwing to all those little wideouts everywhere? Imagine those Houston Oilers playing against those Houston Oilers. High scoring, big plays, up and down the field. That is exactly what that game last night felt like. It felt very much like those Houston Oilers teams. The Rams and the Chiefs last night combined for over 1,000 yards and 105 points. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes throws for 478 yards. He throws for 6 touchdowns, but he did also throw 3 interceptions, including that pick six. Rams quarterback Jared Goff, he throws for 400 yards, but he throws for 4 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. And that was the difference in the game. The Chiefs turned the ball over 5 times, just 2 turnovers for the Rams. Hey, Patrick Mahomes has a huge arm. He has a huge upside. But didn't it look at times last night, especially late, like he is relying on that big arm a little too much? And as a result, he throws those 2 late picks and the Rams are able to hold on. They beat the Chiefs 54-51 in LA to move on to 10-1. The Chiefs drop down to 9-2. Now, was this the best game that I've ever seen? No, it wasn't. It was a good game. It was an entertaining game. But that was Big 12 football to me. I do like a little bit of defense. I'm not saying it has to be all defense. I'm not looking for the 6-3 kind of game. But could I have like a hint of defense? Just a touch of it? Hey, it was a highly entertaining game though. Wild night in Los Angeles. That was a big win for the Rams. And you know what? It was a big win for the Southern California area. And I know that most people out there don't even know they have football yet. But for those fans out there that just need something positive after what has gone on in that Southern California area, hey, good for them. Great win for the Rams. And it also does show that despite some of the setbacks they've had defensively, despite losing Cooper Kupp, hey, the Los Angeles Rams are still a force to be reckoned with. You know, between the Kansas City Chiefs, the Los Angeles Rams, and the New Orleans Saints, there are going to be a ton of points scored in this upcoming postseason. We just talked about running backs. The NFL right now is so crazy and so pass happy. There is no defense being played. The NFL right now with some of these teams, it is absolutely Big 12 football, and we saw that last night in Los Angeles. You know, after losing to one of his divisional rivals and seeing his team's playoff hopes take yet another hit, Cincinnati Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis, he was in a little bit of a foul mood on Monday. Speaking to the press, Lewis questioned Baltimore Ravens rookie quarterback Lamar Jackson's longevity after the Ravens rookie ran the ball more times in one game than any quarterback ever has in the Super Bowl era. Here's what Lewis had to say. Quarterbacks don't run forever in the NFL. Sooner or later, they get hurt and they don't run the same. Now, in his first start, Lamar Jackson ran the ball as the quarterback 27 times. That's 5 more times than any quarterback since 1960. And his 117 rushing yards were the most by a quarterback in 4 years. Hey, I agree with Marvin Lewis. We have seen running quarterbacks, guys like Randall Cunningham, Donovan McNabb, Dante Culpepper, Michael Vick, all suffer at least one pretty significant injury that puts them on the shelf for an extended amount of time. Jackson didn't take too many big hits on Sunday, but they are coming. And in that way, Marvin Lewis is absolutely correct. Hey, young fella, you better start getting down because NFL defenses will end your career for you. They've done it to better quarterbacks than you. I promise you, they will do it to you. So I do get what Marvin Lewis is saying. You can't run forever in the NFL. But based on what I saw on Sunday, you can run forever against Marvin Lewis's Cincinnati Bengals defense. 27 runs and you never put a big shot on him? Hey, Marvin Lewis, you could have taught him a lesson and your defense couldn't do it. How bad is the Cincinnati defense? It's so crazy because it was just a year, 2 years ago, we were looking at the Cincinnati defense and saying, hey, I don't know if they can do anything offensively, but that defense is pretty good. Up front, Geno Atkins, they got a pretty stout defensive front. They're going to be pretty tough. And now we're looking at the Bengals and they couldn't even touch a rookie quarterback that ran all over the field. Yeah, Lamar Jackson, you better be careful. But don't worry about being careful against Cincinnati Bengals and Marvin Lewis because they're not going to touch you. We found that out on Sunday for sure. Finally, moving over to the NBA, it sounds like the Washington Wizards are letting teams around the league know they are ready to make some deals. And more importantly, no one is off limits. The Washington Wizards are now 5-11. And unlike past years, this year, they are saying they are willing to even move top guards, John Wall and Bradley Beal. Now, Washington is saying they would prefer to just reshape the team around Wall and Beal, but they don't really have anyone else to trade. And Beal and Wall's teammates really aren't stepping up and showing any trade value. So how many trade options do you honestly have? You don't have anyone else on the roster that truly has any value. So the Wizards are kind of hamstrung by who else can they deal? You're going to have to deal Beal and Wall, or you're not going to really have anything. Now, Beal is 25, and I think he is probably the guy that would bring in the most return for a trade because he's a great three-point shooter, and I think in the right situation, he can move the ball. Maybe you could convince him to play a little bit of defense. So I think Beal is the guy. Now, Wall has a contract extension that is starting next year. He's going to average $42 million annually for 4 years. So it's going to be a lot tougher to move John Wall. And I know he's a five-time All-Star, and I know that he has a huge upside. He is an absolute jet on the court, but getting anything for Wall is going to be tough because that price tag is just so huge. So when the Wizards come out and they say, hey, we're willing to now move these two guys. We weren't ever willing to move these two guys before, but now we are. I mean, why wouldn't you be? Why wouldn't you hear offers on Beal and Wall? Are you really holding out any sort of hope that those two knuckleheads are going to somehow figure things out? I mean, the Wizards have been waiting on them for, what, 4-5 years now? Hey, maybe this is the year John Wall and Bradley Beal figure it out. No, it's not, because they never figure anything out. They do the same thing every single year. The only difference now, they don't have as much help around them. They don't seem to get along. And it kind of looks like neither one of them really cares that much. Other than that, yeah, Washington, you're in great shape. If I were you, I'd be taking anything I could get for either one of those guys because you're going nowhere fast with them. There is no question about that. Hey, coming back, like I said, Mondays are always so busy. On Tuesdays, we like to take a little closer look at the world of football. When we get back, we are going to be discussing some of the biggest winners and losers from what was a very good weekend in the NFL and college football. So let's take a look at some of the biggest winners and losers from the weekend in football. And you know, it was an interesting weekend in football. I don't know if it was a great weekend in football. And we're going to start off in college football right now. And it didn't have a ton of marquee matchups. And yet, we did still have some winners and losers. I want to talk a little bit about why that schedule was a little bit weird this weekend in college football. So let's start off. Our first winner, we are going to give to the University of Central Florida. Yes, they get a big win. So they get named a winner this week, sort of. Now, College Game Day was in town, and a national television audience actually was able to tune in to see number 11 Central Florida, who turned in probably their best performance of the season. They dominate number 24 Cincinnati 38-13 on Saturday night in front of the second largest crowd in UCF history. Here is what head coach Josh Heupel had to say. I think it's the first time most of the people have gotten a chance to see what our university is all about. The size of it, the energy, the passion from our fan base, what a game day atmosphere looks like inside of our stadium. This is big time football. We've got great players on the field. I think everybody saw that tonight. And again, we've got an opportunity to go 1-0 and add another tally to our season. Hopefully people enjoyed what they saw. Hey, I agree with everything head coach Josh Heupel said, except for the part when he said, this is big time football. Because when I watched that game, and I did watch that entire game on Saturday night, I came away with the feeling that that wasn't really big time football. Mostly because I noticed on the first two plays from scrimmage that Cincinnati was not in fact a big time football opponent. Playing in front of a whopping 47,000 fans, Cincinnati had a delay of game and a false start on their first two plays from scrimmage because the noise had them so rattled. You're going to tell me that playing a team like Cincinnati, who was ranked number 24, but you could clearly see they had no business being ranked number 24. The only reason they're moving up is because other teams are losing. And hey, they kept winning, so we have to put them up there somewhere. But when I watched that game, and I like what Central Florida does, they fire the ball all over the place, they score a lot of points, they're very exciting to watch. But are you really going to tell me that this conference is capable of holding its own in a stadium of, say, double that? 80,000 fans plus that we see consistently week in, week out in the Big Ten or the SEC? Yeah, get out of here with that. I'm sorry, but the numbers don't lie, and the numbers are still telling me that Central Florida hasn't played anyone. And do you know why the numbers are saying that? Because they haven't played anyone. I like what Central Florida is doing, but when I keep hearing again and again how mistreated they are, hey, play a schedule that's not ranked in the hundreds, and then maybe we can discuss it. But when you don't play anybody, you're nothing more than a cute story, and that's all. I'm going to give our first loser this week, and I'm going to give it to someone from Harvard. Now, I know that if you go to Harvard, you have to be really, really smart, right? I mean, that's just what we hear. Just like people who live in the flyover states must be really, really dumb, right? Yeah, sometimes those stereotypes are dead wrong. Here's an example. Harvard running back Devin Darrington had a touchdown called back over the weekend during Harvard's 45-27 win over Yale on Saturday. Now, why was the touchdown called back? Was it for maybe a holding penalty? Maybe an illegal crackback block? No, this was actually for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. What in the world is going on in a Harvard game that you would call back a touchdown run? What could this genius have done? Dive into the end zone? Maybe he spiked the ball and taunted an opponent? No, those would have actually seemed smart by comparison. In the fourth quarter of the game versus Yale, Darrington ran up the middle for a 27-yard touchdown, and as he raced toward the goal line, this Ivy League scholar turned around and flipped off the chasing Yale defenders. Instead of adding another score, the play was called back, and ultimately, Harvard had to settle for a field goal. Hey, just goes to show you, going to Harvard doesn't always make you that smart. Gotta give a winner, and I'm going to give it to someone from the University of Wisconsin, and I know that Wisconsin's season has not gone according to plan. This was a team that had hopes of making it to the college football playoff, just maybe. Considering they returned their quarterback, they returned their offensive line, and they returned running back Jonathan Taylor. But first, Wisconsin lost to BYU in week 3, then they got blown out by Michigan, then they lost to Northwestern, then they lost to Penn State. Wisconsin isn't even ranked anymore. But we are going to give a winner to Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor because he's still having a pretty good season. On Saturday, Jonathan Taylor racked up 321 yards and 3 touchdowns, and the Badgers beat Purdue on the season. Taylor now has over 1,800 yards. Could he break the 2,000-yard mark on Saturday against Minnesota? We have seen in the past, if you break that 2,000-yard mark, you usually get at least an invite to the Heisman ceremony, don't you? Are those days over? Are we not even going to invite him if he breaks 2,000 yards? Have to keep an eye on Jonathan Taylor this week. See if he could hit that monumental 2,000-yard mark. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to stay in the Big Ten, and I'm going to give it to Ohio State going to give it to their head coach, and I'm going to give it to their defense. Now, the Ohio State Buckeyes somehow managed to get a win against a very scrappy Maryland team on their senior day on Saturday. But the news was not very good for Ohio State. First, there was the fact that that defense allowed over 500 yards of offense to a Maryland offense that is ranked 87th in the country in yards per game. But hey, the Buckeyes got another win, no harm, no foul. But then we also saw head coach Urban Meyer looking like he was literally going to spontaneously combust on the sideline. Not once, like multiple times. And that wasn't the only concerning part of the day for Urban Meyer, because then we had that horrifying stretch late in the game where the cameras kept finding Urban scratching his junk like a flea-ridden dog. Or I guess like his former assistant coach Zach Smith after a trip to the Gentleman's Club. Either way, gross! I don't need to see any of that. Ohio State, you were definitely a loser this weekend. I am going to give a winner to the Citadel! Well, at least for one half. I know. The Citadel ended up getting pummeled in the second half. But how excited was everyone to see an FCS military institute actually tied with the mighty number one Alabama Crimson Tide on Saturday at halftime? I mean, the Citadel managed to keep the Alabama offense off of the field for most of the first half. They kicked a field goal as the half expired and were tied with Alabama 10-10. Yes, they ended up getting drug up and down the field 50-17, but I'm telling you right now, these Citadel kids, they are going to be telling their grandkids this story someday. And I know when they tell the story, it's probably going to sound a little bit different, because it's probably going to be, and then we were tied, and the number one Alabama Crimson Tide had to take us into overtime before finally beating us as we just ran out of steam playing against the top team in the country. I can see it now. You know that's what's coming. It isn't going to be a we were tied at halftime. It's going to be a we were tied until the final ticks of the clock. Disney is going to be making a movie. Sandra Bullock is going to be teaching Tua Tagovailoa how to throw a football. I mean, it's going to be a whole thing. But hey, congrats to the Citadel. Like I said, I know it was just for a half, but for a half, the Citadel was at least playing with the big boys. And that was kind of fun to see. I know it was exciting for a lot of people around the country. I am going to give our final loser this week in college football, and I'm going to give it to the SEC schedules. And I talked about it when we started, kind of a weird week in college football, and the SEC was a big part of that. And I mean, it's just kind of how things have to be. But this past weekend in the SEC, it was a little bit rough to watch. Most of the SEC teams have already completed their conference schedules. And so they're actually getting ready for big rivalry games this week coming up. But here was the out-of-conference lineup this past Saturday, and I'm warning you ahead of time, it's really soft. Florida hosted Idaho. Yeah, they pasted the Vandals. Of course, Alabama had those pesky Citadel Bulldogs. Texas A&M actually had a better-than-people-think UAB team, but, I mean, it's still UAB. South Carolina blew out Chattanooga. Auburn beat up on Liberty. Kentucky actually had a little bit of a battle with Middle Tennessee. LSU crushed Rice, and Georgia completely dominated Massachusetts. Now, all of the big conferences have these weeks. They do. Anybody who sits here and points at the SEC and says, look at the SEC playing that soft non-conference schedule, you have the non-conference weak teams too. You just do it in weeks one or two or three. The SEC does it at the very end of the schedule. But when they do it at the end of the schedule, it's like we get all hyped up. We're starting to see all these good conference games. We're starting to see all these basically playoff games late in the season. And then the SEC rolls out this horrible week, this awful week against really, really inferior competition. And for that week, everybody just kind of looks around and goes, why is the SEC playing these horrible schools? Aren't they already done with their out-of-conference schedule? No, they actually hold on to one as kind of a let's get better, let's feel good going into our last regular season game against what is usually a rivalry. But it is kind of an ugly look. I completely understand it. And as a result, college football wasn't as good this past weekend as it has been recently. Hey, coming back, we need to switch over to the NFL. We did see a number of winners and losers over there. Got to get to those when we get back. So let's switch over to the NFL and let's take a little bit of a closer look at some of the things that took place in the NFL, because we saw some very important winners and losers over in professional football. And now we are starting to hit that stretch run and playoff races are starting to really take shape. It's going to be interesting to watch the NFL over the next month, because there are some teams that I don't think anyone saw coming. And here is the first one, because I am going to give a winner and I am going to give it to a team that I forked just a week ago, and I don't think they can contend for a Super Bowl. But the Indianapolis Colts have got to be considered a winner this week. They were sitting at 3-5. They were in third place in the AFC South. And when the Colts hosted the Tennessee Titans on Sunday, who were actually the second place team just ahead of them, we looked at this game and said, hey, the Titans have a chance to maybe make a run at the Houston Texans, put themselves solidly in the playoff race. Yeah, that is not at all how that went. The Indianapolis Colts came out and they didn't just beat the Titans. They beat the mess out of the Titans. Andrew Luck is actually now perfect against Tennessee. His record is now 10-0 when he faces the Titans. He throws for nearly 300 yards on Sunday. He throws for another 3 touchdowns on Sunday. We'll see if they can actually make that run into the postseason, but beating the Titans 38-10 on Sunday, and now Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota has an injured elbow and he didn't finish the game. Hey, that might make things a little bit easier on the Colts. They should be able to pass the Titans and maybe take a run at the Houston Texans. I don't know if the Colts are going to be good enough to get a wild card spot. I don't know if they can catch the Texans, but hey, Andrew Luck is playing so much better than I thought he would. It's amazing what happens when you put an offensive line in front of the guy. All of a sudden, he looks reborn. All of a sudden, he looks like the Andrew Luck that we did remember. And I think the most surprising part for me with the Colts is their defense is actually stepping up and playing good. I didn't expect that at all. I thought the Colts had way too many holes. I know they're getting over on a little bit of a soft schedule, but the Indianapolis Colts, definitely a winner this last Sunday. I am going to give a loser, and it has to go to this team, because the Jacksonville Jaguars are without a doubt one of the biggest losers this week. On Sunday, the Jacksonville Jaguars go out. They absolutely dominate the Pittsburgh Steelers. They play their best game of the season easily, and everything is working for the Jags. Their defense was firing on all cylinders, just like they did last year. They forced Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger into 3 interceptions. Jalen Ramsey is strutting around. Everybody is talking junk to Big Ben. It was 16-0 Jaguars very late in the third quarter. And everybody's kind of looking at this and saying, maybe Pittsburgh just doesn't match up well with Jacksonville. Like, for whatever reason, Jacksonville just has their number. Yeah, and then the Steelers woke up and rolled off 20 straight points, and the Jaguars dropped to 3-7. Oh, and by the way, the Jags front office says they are open now to trading Jalen Ramsey. Hey, it was a fun ride while it lasted, Jacksonville. What'd you get out of that group? One season? Well done. You're definitely a loser this week. I'm going to give a winner this week, and I'm going to give it to someone that is not that popular, because I know that Dallas Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott has taken a lot of grief this season, and mostly is because of all the things everyone focuses on that he can't do. But on Sunday, Prescott quieted critics for at least, I don't know, a few minutes when he leads a game-winning drive for the Cowboys against the Atlanta Falcons. It's amazing what happens when you run the ball and you don't ask Dak to throw it 50 times. Prescott threw the ball just 32 times on Sunday. He went 4 of 6 on the final drive, and the Cowboys went 51 yards to beat the Falcons on the final play of the game. Hey, Dallas is now 5-5, and I know that Jason Garrett still looked like a moron on Sunday. Don't think that he's out of the woods yet, but being just a game and a half behind Washington, who now suddenly doesn't have their starting quarterback, I don't know. Could Dallas rally for a playoff spot? I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing it out there. I am going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to Carolina Panthers head coach Riverboat Ron Rivera. Look, I know right now in this era, it is extremely popular for teams to go for 2 and the win when you score a late touchdown and an extra point would tie things up. We see it in the college game all the time. We've seen it in the NFL this year too. On Sunday, Carolina Panthers head coach Ron Rivera wanted to show what a big gambler he is by going for two with the game in the balance. And you know, we always hear silly things coaches say afterwards. They say things like, I believe in my team. I have confidence in them. And I would make the same decision again. Well, then you're not very bright. With just over a minute to play against the Detroit Lions on Sunday, the Panthers went for two instead of just kicking the tying extra point. And what happened? If you guessed that Cam Newton sailed a pass over the head of an open wide receiver, then you are the winner. And apparently you're not Ron Rivera, because he is not a winner this week. He is actually a loser. Here's the thing. If I give you the option of playing a full quarter or of having a game come down to just one play, which would you choose? If I am better than my opponent, then I take the full quarter because I know my horses are eventually going to take over. If I am maybe inferior, or maybe I am at a disadvantage on the road, maybe I have an injury, maybe they are just red hot, then maybe I'm thinking about taking one play. Carolina is a better team than the Detroit Lions. They should have just kicked it and won the game in the last quarter. There was no reason to take that risk. And it's not like that Carolina offense is super explosive. They're not. It's still Cam Newton. We have no idea exactly what he's going to do. He can look great on one play. He can look horrible on the next. Hey, Carolina just took a big loss in the playoff race. That could come back to bite them. I'm going to give a winner, and I'm going to give it to a guy that is best known for being the butt fumbler, because on Monday, the Washington Redskins signed quarterback Mark Sanchez to be Colt McCoy's backup now that Alex Smith is gone for the year. Washington apparently chose Sanchez over such quarterbacking studs as E.J. Manuel, Kellen Clemens, Josh Johnson, and T.J. Yates. You know, in his career, Mark Sanchez has thrown 86 touchdowns, 86 interceptions. He has a 73.9 passer rating. Oh, and he also has a job as an NFL quarterback. I don't know how he does it. I told you last week, sometimes the sun just shines on certain people. Mark Sanchez is one of those people. I am going to give our final loser of the week this week in the NFL, and I am going to give it to a team that I didn't think would be here, because I keep waiting for the Philadelphia Eagles to hit the switch, but I'm starting to think that the switch is broken, that the switch no longer exists. 1 week after pooping their pants against the Dallas Cowboys just last week, they completely go no-show this week on Sunday, get beat like a drum by the New Orleans Saints. Hey, I didn't expect Philadelphia to win this game. I really didn't. I just thought they might compete in this game, and that absolutely did not happen. The Saints beat the defending champions 48-7. They outgained Philadelphia 546 yards to 196. I keep thinking the Eagles are going to get going, but they just have so many injuries on both sides of the ball. They definitely are suffering from Super Bowl hangover. The Philadelphia Eagles just look like they are absolutely done this year. Hey, tomorrow on the Daily Dose, we will be bringing you the latest and greatest in the world of sports news. We just might have a little bit of a Thanksgiving theme show for you tomorrow. Plus, we will have to get to some Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You never know what we might have to rank this week. I have to say thank you all so much for listening to the Daily Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, that text us, that message us, thank you so much. It is appreciated. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.